Blog Talk.
Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just playing Bill.
And Bill, your phone is breaking up. Go change your phone, dude. You're barely there. Bill's off in California where it's sunny. Well, not really so much sunny right now.
Yeah.
It's already set out there. There you are. You're there.
Oh, yeah.
Stars are out.
Stars are out.
Raining here.
I'm sorry.
However,
I need the rain. I mean, I'm sorry you have it. I wish I did.
Yeah, we're good as far as the rain is concerned. At this point, you know, golf season's over. I don't care if it rains, it snows, it hails, it's foggy. It doesn't make any difference to me.
Yeah.
You know, no golf, no care.
Exactly.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing good. I still can't find Ryan, but that's okay. I'm still looking. Things is going good here, by golly. Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah. How about up there?
We're trying to get everything done because as soon as CJ's out of school tomorrow, we're out of here.
Oh, cool. Where are you going?
Just my parents. Usual Thanksgiving thing.
Yep.
We go down there for Easter and Thanksgiving and the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be leaving tomorrow after CJ gets out of school. We'll go straight down. We'll run into Chicago evening rush 3 hours.
Yeah.
So it'll take us, instead of our usual 2 hours and 40 minutes to get there, it'll probably take us about 4.
Mm-hmm.
Of which we'll spend the last hour about 10 miles from my parents' house.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That last 10 miles will be killer.
Yeah.
Your
family showing up, or?
My sister Elizabeth and Kevin, my nephew who was injured over the summer.
Yep.
We'll be joining my parents for Thanksgiving dinner, so I'll get a chance
to
see him and his new prosthesis.
So he got fitted for the prosthesis.
He's fitted for the prosthesis. Apparently everything is doing okay.
Good.
So we'll get a pretty good idea. We'll get a chance to spend some time with him.
Yep.
Dad was in the hospital on Friday.
Ooh.
Kidney stones.
Oh, man. Oh, jeez. Oh.
But apparently not horrible, terrible, bad. Obviously, he took himself to the hospital, and that's, you understand, my father taking himself to the hospital is
serious pain. Yep,
And I understand kidney stones can be excruciating. So
I have heard that. Knock on wood, I never experience it.
Right, same here. Although I'm a big I drink lots and lots of milk, so it's in my future.
Yeah, well, I've been drinking milk all my life, and I don't have them, so. You have a few years of grace.
Maybe it's because we drink lots of milk, we don't have kidney stones.
Could
be.
Actually, I had a friend of mine that had them, and the doctors told him that he needed to stay away from spinach and the other acidy foods.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Well, who knows? I don't know. I'm not a doc.
I don't like spinach, so that keeps me pretty clean.
Well, okay.
I'm big on lots of greens, so.
Yeah.
Fine. So, anyways, he was in and out, and no big deal there. We'll get a chance to spend some time down there. CJ wants to go to the to the Shedd Aquarium, which is a pretty famous aquarium in Chicago on the lakefront. We were there 2 years ago. And she really enjoyed herself, so she wants to go back.
Excellent.
We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
She wants to go to Millennium Park in the city of Chicago. She wants to go to the top of the Sears Tower. She wants to do all this stuff. I'm just kind of
all the tourist stuff, huh? Yeah, okay.
I want to rest.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, well, that's okay. In just a few years, she'll be driving. She can take herself, Tracy.
Yeah, like I'm going to let her go to She might be a black belt, but I go down dark alleys.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Hey, so, did you get that link that I sent to you on that Bloomberg article?
I did, and didn't read it.
Oh, didn't read it. Okay. It just said that oh gosh, you know that 3.5 GDP number that we quoted? Forget that. It was only 2.8.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be further revised.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be. I think 2.6, 2.7 is probably all it's going to be revised down to.
Yeah.
But, I did see that, but I had already seen the story, and I got the general gist of what was going on.
Yeah.
So, somebody sent me this link. This is, look, housing is up 10% in October. And I was like,
yeah, right.
Okay.
Okay.
Moron!
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, new housing starts crashing through the floor.
Exactly.
Look, existing home sales up 10%.
Yeah, right, sure.
That's what happens when you give away $8,000.
You betcha.
People are going to come out of work order for it. So.
And, of course, that does not take into account the one out of four mortgages that are underwater.
I being one of those four.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yep.
So, right. I've heard lots of people telling me how the economy is improving, and all I keep saying is, man, oh man, are you going to be in for a rude awakening? However, I did consider the possibility that you and I are wrong. I did consider that possibility.
Oh, yeah, we could be.
I did consider the possibility that, in fact, the economy is made its turn and it is going to begin improving. I did make that, I did think about that.
And?
As a dear character of a nice show that used to say, I considered it for about 8/10 of a second, and for an Android, that's a really long time.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, indeed.
Me wrong?
Yeah.
Well, of course, it's possible.
I suppose.
Perfect.
Yeah, right.
Close! I'm close!
Yeah.
No. I'm not as perfect as humanly possible.
No?
But who would want to be?
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. I wasn't catching on where you were going with that.
it's the whole idea of, if you're that perfect, then you know everything that's going to go on. Boring.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you be lonely, too? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just donated. Anyways,
yep.
Last week I went back and I listened to the show, and, Dear Bill, we kind of meandered a little bit last week.
We did meander.
We meandered all over the place, didn't really do a whole lot,
nope.
And I decided that I was going to be more organized today.
And focused.
Well, let's not get carried away.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, okay. We don't want to get too perfect here.
So, I took a nap during the last hour.
All right.
So that I would feel refreshed.
Yeah, a little power nap there.
Yeah, didn't work.
No, I'm sorry.
Dragging more now than I was before.
Okay.
So I'm not likely to be doing too good. And here we are, 10 minutes into the show, and we haven't talked about anything yet.
Well, we talked about the 3.5 thing, the 2.8.
That's true.
Yeah.
I did get my Christmas decorations up this weekend.
Cool.
It was 56 degrees. It was warm, sunny, and we got our Christmas decorations up. So they look nice. And, of course, we have more than anybody else in the neighborhood. Ha, 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 ha.
My across the street neighbor has got that too. He tested it.
Yeah, the two guys that showed up at the door yesterday, giving us a list of the dates where we have to turn the lights down, so
oh, really?
The shuttle that goes overhead doesn't have problems. You know, I was polite to them. You know, I like NASA guys. Jeez.
And you're supposed to turn them down. Why?
Well, apparently the reflection causes the shuttle disorientation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Who knew?
Hmm.
You know, I don't have 50,000 lights.
Yeah.
It's 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I wonder what they do about the landing, about the airport landing lights then.
Actually, we're on the normal landing pattern for our airport.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So they just consider it to be an outer marker.
There you go. Tell NASA it's an outer marker.
It's just an outer marker. All right. Let's start talking about outer markers.
There you go.
There's a couple of things we've got to talk about.
Okay.
We talked about Obama and his bowing last week a lot.
Mm.
And about how everybody's all kind of bent out of shape about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, you know, the left says, you know, that we're all making a mountain out of a molehill.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Der Spiegel says that molehill is actually pretty damn big.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, did you happen to catch the picture of him bowing to the Chinese premier also?
No.
Yeah, well, he did. And the thing that struck me is this. Neither one of those two bowed back.
Oh, well,
so if it's like this custom and stuff, why wasn't there a reciprocation?
Well, you know, when the little boy comes to bow to you, you
mm-hmm.
don't have to bow back.
That's right. You betcha.
Okay. So, you know, the rest of the world is laughing at him. Congratulations.
Yes, they are.
Obama has done exactly what he said he was going to do. He's going to change the world's perception of America.
Yes, he has.
They've gone from being pissed at us to laughing their asses off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's an improvement that I was looking for.
Nah, me either. I'd rather have them pissed and afraid of us than laughing at us.
Now, whether what China, what it was reported has been said to by China to him or not is true concerning our fiscal problems.
Mm.
I'm certain that they weren't really happy with the idea that, you know, what's a trillion here, a trillion there in debt? Let's add another trillion to the pot.
Yes, indeed.
Congress, thank you, Harry Reid, managed to do exactly what everyone has been saying was going to happen for the last 6 months. And the Senate passed health care reform.
No.
No, that's correct. They did not actually pass health care reform, although you'd swear to God everybody thought that was exactly what was happening.
Yeah, I know. The only thing they did was they said, yeah, okay, let's go ahead and debate it.
Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah.
Can you imagine all of that hoopla over the entire argument of let's talk?
Right. And how tough that was.
And that actually was tough. You know, and it only cost them, I don't know, $500 million worth of bribes.
Yeah. Cheap at half the price.
$500 million. You know, it is clear that Congress has become so disconnected from reality that they are absolutely incapable of understanding how much money they're spending.
Oh, I don't think they have a clue.
You know, you can go to them and say, do you realize you spent $2 trillion? Yeah, well, you know, we'll work it out. No,
yeah.
You understand. $2
trillion.
Dollars. Not $2 trillion over the last century. Not $2 trillion over the last decade. $2 trillion over the last 13 months.
Yeah, I know.
It just doesn't make any sense. You know, I am a numbers person. I am used to dealing with, you know, numbers and complicated processes and stuff like that. And there are times when I'm having a really difficult time getting my head around the idea that the American budget is now going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $4 trillion a year.
The what?
The budget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, everybody pays attention to the deficit. Everybody pays attention to the debt. But no one understands the idea that the United States government is going to be spending $4 trillion a year.
And two things about that. One, it's going to be on borrowed money. And two, the interest on that debt is going to inexorably climb.
Climb is going to be a really generous way of suggesting.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to be gentle.
If we get back to historical interest rates,
which is
in the vicinity of 5%.
Yeah.
What was it? Is it $800 billion? No, that can't be right. $800 billion? No, that can't be right. $800 million per interest point? Per.
Dang. I can see the formula, but
you know what? I saw somebody say that it was $800 billion, and I thought, no, that doesn't sound right to me.
No, it doesn't.
$800 million certainly could sound right.
Well, right now the interest on the debt is about $225 billion a year. That's at an average rate of a little under 3%.
All right, so $800 million more would put it to about $300 billion with a percentage point. Yeah, okay, I'm buying that.
Well, but the deficit is expected to be 14.3 trillion at the end of this fiscal year.
And
that's before health care?
Right. That at the beginning of 2009 fiscal year, we were right around 10.
Well, I guess the other way to look at it is this, Tracy. At a 3% average rate, assuming that stayed constant, at $10 trillion, you're looking at $300 billion in interest.
And 4% would be $400 billion.
Yeah.
So it's $100 billion per point at least.
Yeah.
At this point and growing.
Yeah. Yep.
So historically, around 5% means that in this case, $500 million in interest at 10, but of course we're on our way to 14.
Right.
You know.
So now we're up to 700 something billion.
You know, which means that it's, you know, second only to Medicare, Social Security. You know, that means that a whole lot of things. Now, I've always made the argument that most of that interest is actually turned over to American individuals, corporations, retirement plans. So that's not money that, you know, it's money that gets turned back into the American economy.
Except
that's
I'm not sure
altogether
that's
true with China sitting on,
right.
You know, $1.5 trillion worth of our debt.
Right.
But of course,
well, plus it gives them a lot of leverage.
It does give them a lot of leverage, and of course, you know, Obama isn't a leverage kind of guy anyway. So the entire idea that Congress is going to consider the probability of adding another $1 trillion a year to the budget, all of which is going to have to be borrowed money, every single solitary penny of it, is just the disconnect, the mindlessness that is going on in that Congress right now just boggles the mind. I am convinced at this point that nobody. And I know how you feel about your Congress critter, but, you know, I really honestly believe that there should be nobody returned to Congress this time around. Nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, every single senator should be turned out. Every single congressperson should be turned out. You know, if you've got somebody that's really good, then, you know, fine, let them have 2 years off and come back. You know, the reality is, at this point, I just can't, in good conscience, suggest that anybody in Congress needs to stay.
I guess it really depends on if your Congress critter is a fiscal conservative, and you aren't going to replace them with another fiscal conservative, why would you do that?
Okay, I mean, understand, you know, that. I'm going to make the assumption that, you know, we're going to have 460 some odd races next year that are going to be competitive, in as much as everyone is going to have a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making that assumption.
Yeah.
And anybody in their right mind that thinks that, you know, another Nancy Pelosi is exactly what's needed in Congress at this point.
Oh man.
is nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
So what we're going to have, more than likely, are going to be small government fiscal conservatives running.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of them are going to be rhinos that are going to, you know, have caught the face, as it were.
Yep.
But
yep.
I just don't buy into the general idea that we're going to have a whole lot of liberals going, you know, Congress has just not been, you know, representing us this well. You know, at this point, it just doesn't make any sense to me that would be the case.
You know, if you get a chance, follow PARD 68, P-A-R-D 68, capital P. He's a young conservative. He just tweeted me a graph that is, well, it's M3 in debt, and it's a graph that, now it won't come up. Thank you very much. Anyway, it's pretty amazing. It truly is. And I'm...
Gary,
it's a problem loading. Come on. What is this?
All right. So, starting on Monday, Congress comes back in and the Senate will start debate. It already looks like it's dead in the water.
Mm-hmm. Joe Lieberman has said if it's got a public option, if it's taken private insurance companies out, he's not going to have anything to do with it. Our two favorite Republicans from up in the state of Maine apparently are being wined and dined by Obama, Rahm, and Harry Reid. So we could get snowed on.
Yeah, but of course if there's no public option, then, you know, they lose a whole bunch of their other people.
Well, yes, I know, but I guess what I'm saying is that...
one senator off and two from our side.
Yep.
Ostensibly from our side.
Yep, and then all of a sudden, by God, that's bipartisan.
I still think it's dead. I really do.
Okay.
And I've said this to Victoria, and she's not happy about me saying this to her.
Mm-hmm.
That if it dies now, it dies for our lifetime.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Because in the next two years, we're going to start dealing with Social Security, and 2-3 years after that, we're going to be dealing with Medicare, and there's just going to be no way in hell that Congress is going to be able to get that through us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, through anything anymore. I mean, you know, at this point, they're hoping that people are not paying attention. And for the most part, they're perfectly correct. Right now, there's probably 5 or 6 million people that are paying close attention to what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the vast majority of people are just hunkering down, bowing their heads, and hoping the hell they can survive the next 6 months.
Yep. And, you know, those people are gradually waking up. polls for me don't necessarily accurately have any predictive value. The value that I get from them is if it's a series poll, what are the changes month to month? If they're asking the same questions, calling different people, what are the changes month to month? And there is good news in almost every one of those polls, whether it's Rasmussen, who is a likely voter poll, versus Gallup, which is registered voters, to some of the other smaller ones. They all show the same thing. Independents are leaving the whole idea of this socialist experiment or attempted experiment, that people are mostly against the health care bill as it has been presented so far. And that is true in every subcategory down to under 20,000 annual income. Even young people are turning against it.
Well, you know, Victoria said something to me over the weekend that concerned me. She said, I think all of the arguments against healthcare reform, all the bad things that are going to happen, are being overblown.
Really?
And I thought, why do you say that? She goes,
yeah.
I just don't think it's going to be that bad. I don't think there's going to be the mass exodus of people out of private into the public. And I said, there's going to be little reason not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and you know, understand, you know, we're going to have to pay 2.5% penalty, you know, on our income.
Yep.
You know, if we miss a day having insurance.
Exactly.
And I don't know that anybody paid a whole lot of attention to it, but it said any day of the year you don't have insurance, you pay the penalty.
Yep. Absolutely.
Any day. So you could have insurance for 363 days and then lose it, and you'll end up paying the penalty on your full year's income.
Yes, indeed.
Ouch.
I mean, and that's 2.5 of your adjusted gross, folks.
So, you know, I just said, you know, there's... Now, frankly, for me, paying a 2.5%, you know, 2.5% penalty for me is cheaper than buying insurance.
Yep.
By a huge margin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not inclined to be paying, you know, the government an extra 2.5% interest just because.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because.
Because we say so.
You know.
Yep.
I was concerned by that. She's aware of all the arguments about what's going on. She hears what's going on. She just doesn't think it's going to be as bad as people are making it out to be. And I'm afraid that is actually going to be, for the people that are at least hearing all of what's being said,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily paying attention a great deal, but
mm-hmm.
the ones that are hearing what's being said,
mm-hmm.
just thinking that it's being overblown. You know,
well,
too much.
I mean, that absolutely flies in the face of history of every government program.
Well,
it's always worse than what we think it was going to be.
What was I saying? You know, rising costs, lower quality,
yep.
And less freedom. Sounds
mm-hmm.
like a government program to me.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I mean, and there are some truly draconian things in there. I mean, everybody makes fun of Sarah Palin and her death panels thing. My son works as a pharmacist for the Veterans Administration up in Washington, state of Washington. And a number of years ago, he and I got on the subject of drugs that are prescribed and that kind of stuff. And he said they have a comparative effectiveness program in the VA. And he was trying to reassure me that, oh, no, that doesn't mean that they can't get something. It simply means we have to try starting at the bottom of the list and work upwards. And I didn't pursue it with him at the time. But what that says is we're going to give you the least cost drug first. And if that doesn't work, we'll step it up a notch. And my question to all that is, and so how long does it take you to get up to the one that actually does something?
Well, several months.
And, well, probably a year plus. Because, you know, once you start on a drug regime, they've got to monitor you, your blood levels have got to get up, I mean, the drug in your blood levels has to get up to an effective rate. All of that takes time, and that might be time that you really don't have. And thank you very much, but when it comes to my life, I want to be able to talk to my doctor, look him in the face and say, is this the most effective drug that you have? Not, is this the least cost drug that you have?
You know, I was reviewing our blog that we did for Victoria the first 4 months that she was dealing with this. And one of the things that we talked about was the doctor looking to work out different medicines that might be as effective as the ones, the IV she was taking,
mm-hmm.
but cost less.
Uh-huh.
And we said, you know, we're not interested in cost less if it works less.
Exactly.
We're going to make sure that it covers what it has to do, you know, but, you know, if we can save money, great. If we, you know, because, you know, when somebody's walking around with a three-inch hole in the bottom of their foot,
uh-huh.
the last thing you want to do is skimp on antibiotics.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, let me do the cheap stuff. No, sorry.
Yeah, right. I'm voting for effective. Thank you very much.
Right. Effective is what's more important. That's the deal. I agree. Obviously the cost saving orientation is going to become very prevalent. We see that with the mammograms and the pap smear issue.
Oh yeah.
That is exploded
for
us.
I mean,
and,
if I was a woman, I would be so incensed. I mean, I'd be ready to take my club to some Congress critter.
Well, the funny thing about it is, and I read this, you know, the other day, is one of the big themes of Obama was he was going to force insurance companies to do preventative medicine as
a more
cost-effective approach to dealing with issues.
Yep.
So what do they suggest? Well, you know what? We don't have to do this cost-effective stuff on a prevention basis that much, because we're only going to save one out of every 200. Yeah, I
mm-hmm.
don't want to be one of those that one out of the 200 that has to wait an extra year.
Nope.
So survival rate drops dramatically when stuff like that happens.
Oh man,
my mother's best friend when I was growing up found a lump in her breast, and she got, she was interested in pulling her family together, which was at the time, young 20s and teens, and
mm-hmm.
there was lots of strife going on in the family. There's 11
mm-hmm.
kids in the family. Lots of strife in the family. She wanted the family to pull together. So what she did was nothing.
Oh.
And then 3 months later, she was retested, and it had metastasized.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And 3 months later, she was dead. You know, so much for pulling the family together waiting.
Yeah, by waiting. Exactly.
You know,
man.
And you just, think about it, you know, here's a woman that was just 50, with 11 kids, mm. 9 of which were still at home.
Oh, boy.
You know, and it just, you know, it was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. Actually, you know what? She wasn't 50. She was younger than that. She was
wow.
in her mid-40s. You know,
oh, boy.
44, 43, 44,
yep.
somewhere in that area.
Yep.
Thinking back on the timing, you know. But, no, this idea that we're going to reduce the amount of preventative medicine as a cost-saving feature is exactly the wrong place to be doing the cost-saving.
Exactly.
Of course, the other cost-saving thing they want to do is they want to, you know, cut my parents off at the knees from any, you know,
yep.
extensive care.
Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, I have argued, I, you know, since I was in the insurance industry a long time ago, you know, the number has changed slightly. At the time I was in there, 95% of all the medical costs you will incur in your entire lifetime will happen in the last year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now people are saying it's 90% in the last 2 years.
Hmm.
But it doesn't really make any difference because whether it's 95 in the last year or 90 in the last 2 years, the vast majority of the medical expenses you're going to reach in your life are going to happen at the end.
Yes, absolutely. Sure.
You know, and how many people, and we've seen it. I mean, my sister, Anne, who I don't get along with very well, actually did something that really got her in trouble with her in-laws. She really, really liked her mother-in-law a great
okay.
deal. And her mother-in-law had emphysema mm. and lung cancer.
Mm.
And she slipped into, she had a stroke.
Ah, okay.
And she was on a respirator, but she also had a DNR.
Ah.
And the family wouldn't take her off the respirator.
Mm.
And my sister said, that's what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to be on a machine. Why
yep.
are you doing this? Shut up. This is our mother. You have
uh-huh.
nothing to say about it. But
yeah.
this is what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And she spent 3 weeks on the respirator.
Wow.
And woke up.
Really?
They took her off the respirator, and she screamed at them. And
really?
Then died.
Oh, boy. Huh. Yep.
You know, and it was kind of one of those situations where you sit there and kind of go, you know, here they kept her alive for 3 weeks, you know, something she absolutely didn't want to have happen, and they spent a huge amount of money. You know, Kevin, yep. I mean, they've spent, you know, probably somewhere between $150,000 and $200,000 on Kevin in the last several months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've spent probably $100,000 on Victoria in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are not close to end-of-life expenses that are rather extensive.
Yes.
But you can't avoid those type of situations, you know, but you can avoid the situations like, you know, my sister's mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. But,
so, the conservative principle here is people have a right to decide that for themselves. You have that right. Now, whether you can get your family to go along with that, given, for instance, the situation with your sister's mother-in-law, could be problematical.
Right. You know, what do you do in those situations? You know, my sister got herself in trouble with a bunch. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to get off the health care because it's going to continue to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about on Tuesday. Barack Obama is going to announce 34,000 more troops going off to Afghanistan.
Yep. 4,000.
Why
of which
couldn't?
Seven...
Why he couldn't do 6,000 more and make it the 40,000 that was requested? I don't know.
Who knows? And maybe do that like a month ago. And apparently, and I haven't seen the statement attributed directly to the administration yet, but I have heard it spoken of. apparently there are what are called cutouts in that. That, if certain political milestones aren't met, then we're going to pull our people out. If there aren't certain military milestones that are met, we're going to pull our people out. So he's basically built in a whole lot of wiggle room for what I think he wants to do anyway, which is get out of it.
Yeah, except for he sold himself into a corner on that.
Well, he did. He absolutely did. So I think this is his way of saying, okay, I put myself in a corner, now I'm going to get out of my corner by doing this. And I am becoming one of those conservatives that says, if you are not in this to win it, get the hell out now. Don't be wasting troops' lives.
You know, and that's so right. I mean, you and I are in a complete agreement about this.
Yep.
You know, we're there, do the job, get it done, don't micromanage it, don't make it political, get it done, get our troops home. We're happy to have them there in the sense that they're doing what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Let them do their job, let it get it done, bring them home. However, if they're going to be left to hang out in the wind, just you know, bare bones and I'm out there, bring them home. Boy, that just grates me in so many different ways. But I can't, you know, my nephew is going there in February.
Oh, boy.
You know, the idea of him going there and not having the backup and the support that he needs, you know, after two tours in Iraq, is just, you know, that's a roll of the die I'm not comfortable with.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, but pulling our troops out at this particular point does everything bad that could happen would happen because of that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
But it would be the right thing to do if he's going to leave them hanging in the wind.
Absolutely.
Man, I don't like that.
I don't
like that at all.
He leaves us, you and I and all the other conservatives, in a very bad place. Because most of us say, look, if we're going to be there, we have to be there to win. Put in what it's going to take to do that. Listen to your general that you put in charge with the plan that you developed and let him do his job. If you are not going to do that, pull them all the hell out. In 2012, we'll get a new president who will hopefully have a whole ton of resolve, more than this one does. And if it becomes necessary, we'll go in and do it right. I don't know where else you go with that.
It's a much bigger mess having to do that the second time.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I mean, because the key to this whole thing is, how do you get the Afghanistans to trust you? You don't get them to trust you by leaving. By pulling
right,
out.
And, you know, well, you know, at this particular point, anybody that trusts Barack Obama to
oh, yeah.
spit into the wind,
yep.
you know, it's just, you know.
I mean, he has proved over time, even if you just look at his presidency, he has proved over time that, no, you cannot trust him to keep his word. I mean, don't even look at his Senate record. Don't even look at his record in the Illinois state legislature. Just look at his presidency and then make a judgment. And my judgment is, you can't trust this guy. He is not a trustable person.
When character matters,
yep.
he's got nothing that's worth mattering.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm glad he's sending them there. I'm glad
yes.
he's sending them there.
Yes.
If in fact they go there, even with all the qualifiers, putting them on boots on the ground there will be a useful thing.
Yes.
So if in fact he does do that on Tuesday, yay. I will give him a yay.
Yep.
It'll be a qualified yay, but it'll be a yay.
Yeah.
So, there's two more things that I want to get into before we
cool.
get
Let's do it.
Going on. And we've only got about 15 minutes left.
Oh, my gosh.
One of them is going to take time.
Okay.
So I want to spend more time on that. So I'm going to do the short one first. RNC has come up with 10 principles that they think all their candidates should adhere to going into the new election season. Now, have you read those 10 principles? Have you heard about them?
Tell me who put them out again?
RNC.
No, I don't think I've read those.
The Republican National Committee put it out and said, these 10 principles are what we want our candidates to adhere to, as long as they adhere to at least 8 of them.
Oh, right. Oh. Oh, great. Okay, so what? They're going to send me a questionnaire, and so I just check off all 10, right? Doesn't matter what I believe. I'm just going to check them off.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing, okay? 9 of them deal with government size, spending, and activities. Okay? 9 of them say we want smaller government, we want more accountable government, we want those type of, nice platitudes. 9 of them. Do you know what the 10th one is?
No.
It's actually the 8th one out of the 10.
What?
8th one. We support the Defense of Marriage Act.
Oh, man.
Okay. So I said 9 principles and a SOP.
Ah, Jesus.
Why bother?
When are they going to learn? I mean, folks, look, defense of marriage and all of those issues that go with it are not a federal issue. So what is the Republican National Committee doing addressing that? I mean, I'm sorry, it isn't. And you and I have talked about that before on this show.
Dum da dum dum dum.
Yeah, really. God.
So, come on. When you get a chance to see them, look at those 10 principles. I mean, people are suggesting that there's, speaking of wiggle room, a little bit too much wiggle room in there. And of course, they only have to agree to 8 of the 10.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And only the DOMA is on the social side of it. Everything else is and as I said, government orientation
mm-hmm.
there. It's just
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about the elephant in the room that nobody else is talking about and everybody else is talking about.
Okay.
About a week ago, not quite a week ago, last Friday, somebody somewhere decided that they were either pissed, they were either going to blow the whistle, or they were just going to have some dirty-ass fun, and they dumped a whole shitload of emails and documents from the major climate change warming agency in England
CRU.
The UN IPCC has used as its clearinghouse for information on climate global warming.
Yes.
And those emails and documents basically suggest, no, they don't suggest, basically say that the majority of data produced has been fraudulent, manipulated,
yes.
squirreled, hidden, massaged, tweaked, to the point where if they say today is Tuesday, you're going to have to call into question whether they're actually telling you anything that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
The mainstream media, the documents are authentic by the organization, saying that the emails and the documents were authentic.
Yep.
And that the information on there is, in fact, accurate. Now, what I found was rather interesting was, you know, emails are emails, and you can read them a whole lot of different ways. Unless you know the tone of the voice of the speaker on an email, it's really easy to misunderstand what you're reading.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'll concede the fact that some of those emails, which people are going, look at this, are going, yeah, I could read it a different way. Okay? Documentation in the programming code?
Yeah.
Altogether different animal.
Yes, indeed.
When, you know, programming for the climate models specifically has documentation built into it saying what it's doing, and what it's doing is certainly not scientific. It is absolutely political, and it is absolutely, you know, falsifying the results.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can write a computer program that will generate 2 + 2 = 5.
Every
time. You can get a program that'll do that.
Yep.
You know, it just takes a little bit of coding, and if you're really, really good, you can hide how it did it.
Yep.
You know, but most people that have been trained in programming, and let me tell you, all through school, they tried to beat that into me. As a matter of fact, even in the private sector, companies tried to beat it into me. You know, document, 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 document. Whenever you're changing programs, document, document, document.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so the next person that comes along knows what the hell you were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, in these programs, it says, okay, we stopped using the data up, you know, after 1960 because it, you know, didn't give us the results we were looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
Right. Yeah.
Hello? You know what? I did start reading something. They started talking about what, you know, why some of the things have been going on. Let's assume for a second that, in fact, global warming has been occurring. Somebody suggested, I don't know if you've been reading this, I've been paying attention to this, okay? What happened here in the United States in the late 70s and early 80s, you know, as far as the environment was concerned? It's a trick question, because I don't expect that you necessarily have the answer unless you've been paying attention, and I don't know that you have been, so I'm going to give you the answer.
Okay.
Environmentalists said that coal-fired plants were spewing so much sulfur oxide that we were creating acid rain.
Yep. Yeah. No, I read that part. Sure. You bet.
And so they absolutely forced, you know, coal-fired plants to scrub the sulfur oxide out of their
smokestacks.
Emissions.
Yep.
Well, here's something that's rather interesting. Unlike CO2, which is a climate warmer, SO2, sulfur oxide, is a climate cooler.
Yes, it is.
And when we started taking less sulfur oxide in emissions, temperatures started going up.
Fancy
so,
that.
By taking sulfur oxide out of the emissions, we were, in fact, having a balanced environment. We made it unbalanced by being healthier.
Oh,
now,
boy.
There certainly was some argument that could be made that we want to reduce sulfur oxide in plants that would, that those emissions would precipitate in rain and such, over land masses.
Mm-hmm.
But we certainly could allow China and Eastern Seaboard to produce those sulfur oxides because both of those would fall over the ocean, neither of which would have harmed the ocean. And it would have sopped up a fair amount of warming. And there is simple evidence to support this point of view by volcanic action, which throws lots of sulfur oxide up.
Absolutely.
And we get lots of cooling because of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I am not conceding the idea that we have global warming. I'm conceding the idea that we have global change.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you know, change always happens. Nothing humanity is going to do can change. If humanity ceased to exist today on this planet, the climate would change tomorrow. Now, some people would say that would be changing for the better.
Yeah,
the question
right.
would be, in fact, is it changing for the better, you know, or simply just changing?
Exactly.
You know? An environment that changes is not necessarily bad one way or the other. So, anyways.
And, in fact, might be necessary. I mean, I read it someplace today. I don't remember if it was on a blog or on Twitter, but here was the idea. If global warming is caused by mankind as opposed to a natural planetary solar system change, then how is it that we got rid of our last ice age some 10,000 years ago? The answer obviously has to be because of global warming. But we didn't have any SUVs and that kind of stuff then. It's a natural phenomena.
Right, and we will. I will always come back, and nobody's ever given me this answer, and I don't expect anybody to ever do. You know, tell me what the Earth's temperature should be.
Yeah.
And then we can decide whether we are getting closer to it or farther away from it, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Exactly.
So somebody says, the Earth should be 67.3 degrees, and it's 67.1, then you can't tell me that global warming is bad.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I'm all for global warming, actually.
Yeah, well, it's about 39 here. I'd like a little of that right about now. Thank you.
So, no more spewing sulfur oxides.
Yeah. Oh, an interesting point on your programming comment.
Yes.
It turns out that the program that they used for the hockey stick graph, it didn't matter what your inputs were. It would always give you a hockey stick graph. That's our 2 plus 2 equals 5 program. Every time.
You know, if there are not people going to prison, if there are not people that get drummed out of scientific circles, if there is not significant events going on from this, then I will be of the mind that the scientific community has been corrupted in such a way as that I personally will be seeking the end of civilization as we know it.
Incidentally, have you seen any of this carried on the lamestream media?
No, but then again, I don't
watch or listen to
lamestream media.
Yeah. Well,
somebody accused me of watching Fox News too much, and I'm sitting like going, okay, this is how much Fox News I've watched in the last month. None.
Is that right?
None. I haven't seen any Fox News in months.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
The amount of, you know, listening to Rush Limbaugh replies when I go get lunch at lunchtime for the office, or, you know, Hannity when I go get, oh, no, Hannity's not in there, it's our local conservative person, when I go get CJ from school, and, you know, it's news in the morning, so, I don't listen to talk radio when I'm working, you know.
It's
too confusing for me to be able to do my work and listen to the radio.
And listen to and try and stay with whatever it is that they're saying. Yeah, I know.
Right.
I don't multitask that way very well either.
Not anymore. I used to be, but at the same token, for me, it's the stuff that I'm doing now, I really need to pay attention to, and so I just do.
Yeah. So you do.
So I do.
As you are supposed to do.
I put some music on in the background. I pretty much can ignore it. I don't have to worry about listening to it too much. It's just there. So, good.
Yeah. You betcha.
You know,
we
shall see how the rest of the week goes. Bill, I want you to have a really good Thanksgiving.
Tracy, you too. Have a safe trip up to your folks' place.
Down to my folks' place.
Down to your
down.
Folks' place. That's
going
right.
South.
I'm sorry. Well, everything's up from me.
Say your quick shout-out. You got 10 seconds.
Shout-outs to, hey, a new listener, Pard68, Thanks for tuning in. Soccer Seal, if you did. Trav and just me, Pammy, thanks for listening.
Have a good week.
Yeah, you too.
We are into the green room. Good evening, everybody. Hello.
Good evening, folks. And if you're first-time listeners, the green room isn't out on the air, but you get to listen to us just chat a bit.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, things that nobody else pays attention to because, you know, we are off the air. If you're listening to the podcast, you're listening to the podcast. They're not listening to us live. So I've started reading Sarah Palin's book.
Uh-huh, okay.
I got the copies, and, you know, I'm reading. Interesting so far. I don't know if you heard it. Slate Magazine. It happened in the comment section of Slate Magazine. Did you hear about this story?
I don't know. I read something recently about Slate, but I don't remember what it was at this point.
Slate Magazine, in the comment section, somebody had posted a paragraph, ostensibly from the Sarah Palin's book. And, of course, everybody just, you know, absolutely panned it, said it was garbage. How could they, you know, how could anybody even pay attention to it? You know, she's the world's worst writer, you know. And then while all this was going on, the person that posted the paragraph and said, oh, yeah, sorry, not Sarah Palin's book. It's from Obama's Dreams of My Father.
So,
it was just absolutely riotous. You know, you're reading this stuff, and I'm going like, you know, there's a catch to this. I didn't say there was a catch to it. I'm like, yeah, I didn't find the paragraph to be that offensive myself. I went, oh, okay. You know, that was okay. You know, and of course, somebody did say that actually grammatically the sentence was fine. It, you know, it conveyed a sense of, you know, the environment, and it wasn't. It wasn't a bad sentence. It wasn't a bad paragraph. But of course, you know, as long as Sarah wrote it, it was bad and horrible and terrible.
It was.
But of course, then we all shut up when it was, you know, actually Dreams of My Father. I thought it was right. People were having a lot. Anyway, if you come across it, it's fun. It's in Slate Magazine, on their website, in one of their forums. It was kind of fun.
Oh,
I you know, so far I found the book interesting. Oh my God, what is going on?
Ooh, what do you got happening there?
Twitter has a new feature called Lists.
Yes, it does.
Last week I was on 3 lists.
Yeah.
I'm on 16 now.
Really? How cool.
Some of them I probably don't want to be there. Daniel, people too stupid to live list.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I'm on that one. I'm on 94 of them, but I don't know if I'm on that one.
Daniel,
I may have to work a little harder.
Daniel won't talk to me anymore.
Really?
Daniel won't talk to me.
Hey, you were having a really interesting conversation, at least from your side of it, last night.
Which one?
One with Klitner, J-K-L-I-T-N-E-R, I think, something like that.
Yep.
That was a good conversation. I thought you actually quacked him over the head a couple of times really nicely.
My opinion is, and this is my personal opinion, I don't think I've lost the debate yet.
Cool.
Now, I'm certain that the lefties would be suggesting that they got the better of me every single one of those times.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, seeing as how almost all of them ended with the lefty calling me names.
You know what? That's a sure sign that you won.
That's always been my particular point of view. You know, someone starts calling you names, you know, you win.
Yeah, exactly. It means they have no other arguments left.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so, So for me, that's where I'm always going. You know, if somebody gets into the name calling stuff, then I just chalk it up, put a little mark up on my monitor.
There you go. Yep. You know, yep.
That's another one on the belt there.
Another notch in the keyboard.
So they have their talking points. You get them past their talking points.
Yep.
And they're pretty much lost at that point. You know. And of course, you know, when I use a mean phrase, of course they start calling me, "Oh, you're getting mean," and I'm like, you know, go away.
Yeah, really. You haven't seen mean yet.
Well, you know what? In one conversation, I called her a snipe.
Oh, really?
And she's not Native American. She isn't living here. She's overseas.
Ah.
And so of course she quickly went and looked up what snipe was. She wanted to know why I was calling her a little bird.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, actually I just shortened it because of the 140 characters, and what I meant was gutter snipe."
Ah, got it. Okay.
You know. And so, you know, now is that the equivalent of calling her a name? Well, yeah, it is.
Kind of, but if it's an accurate description, then okay.
Well, in fact, she's someone that just she jumps into conversations. I don't follow her.
Ah, okay.
And as far as I know, she's not following me. So somehow, some way, she pops up about once a week. And she jumps into a conversation with a snide, it's not even snarky, I mean, it's snide remark, you know, along the lines of, "You're fat, you're ugly, you're stupid," you know, something along those lines.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, so from, you know, at that particular point, I figured, you know, it gutter snipe is actually a highly accurate, well-described term.
Yeah.
You know, but... You know, that was hundreds of tweets, you know, back and forth before it got to that point.
Oh, that's not bad then.
Oh, no, she'd been calling me names before.
Oh, I see, okay.
You know, I have long since ceased having any rational conversation with her. Now it's just a matter of, you know, who can offer the most, you know, well-tuned insults. At this point.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not necessarily that quick with the wit when I'm speaking.
Yeah. Yep.
But when I'm twitting...
Oh, yeah. You get a little chance to think about it.
I'm pretty sharp.
Yeah.
I'm pretty devastating. Frankly.
Yeah.
And... I absolutely take advantage of the fact that most of the people on the left are cultural illiterates.
Yes.
And therefore, that gives me an opportunity to be quite snarky without them realizing that, in fact, I am. You know. Because I can take advantage of the fact that they're illiterates and, you know, just make comment and then they just kind of go, "What kind of crap is that?"
Yeah, right.
You know, what was the one? I said that it was on the house. I said that they were ignorant, ignorant, illiterate, inconsistent, and incontinent.
Oh, God. And they took offense at the incontinent part, right?
Oh, they said that it just didn't make sense. It was just, it was obviously the wrong word. I obviously meant incompetent. And I went, "No, I meant incontinent." And of course, you know, they just, you know, just went on for like 2 days,
God.
that I used the wrong word, that I didn't understand what I was saying. And I'm like, you know, if you were in fact at all, you know, cultural literate, you know, the incontinent works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when we're talking about politicians. So, but that's the place. And of course, the more they argued that I was wrong, you know, the more other people could see that they were clueless.
Yeah. Yep.
So, it just kind of interests me. I'm working on it. I'm using it as ways of, you know, refining my own arguments on things.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? That was the sulfur issue. Someone else said something along the lines of, reading it in the last couple of days, this idea that we ration healthcare now because of people not being able to afford something. That's a form of rationing.
Yes.
Well, I can say that it's a pretty piss poor argument.
Well, I agree, but it's factually correct.
No, you know what? It's not.
Sure.
Here's the deal. Rationing means that there's a limited amount of what you're trying to supply.
No. No. Let me take that back. Not necessarily, because you've got two sides to that. You've got the supply side, and you've got the cost side.
Okay. Now think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Let's assume that I have, in fact, let's take something pretty innocuous. I have a warehouse with 5 million rolls of toilet paper.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to provide toilet paper to the city of Madison.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there are, in the entire Dane County, about 500,000 people.
Okay.
So, theoretically, I could provide all of them with 10 rolls of toilet paper.
Yes, you could, theoretically.
Okay. So, I can sit there and say, I'm limiting you all to 10 rolls of toilet paper each. That's rationing.
Okay. Based on your
supply,
that's rationing.
I have a fixed supply, and so in order to provide as much coverage as possible, I'm going to limit that supply to everyone.
Okay.
Now, let's say that I am charging $1 a roll.
Okay.
Okay. If you come up to me and say, I would like my 10 rolls of toilet paper, but you only have $7,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you 7 rolls of toilet paper. But I haven't rationed you at all. Because if you had the 10, you could have 10.
Ah, but see, you need to break that down finer. I need a roll of toilet paper, but I only have 50 cents.
Yeah.
You giving me a half a roll?
No, but
so I just got rationed out.
I have the roll to give you.
Yes, you do, but I got rationed out on price.
No, you couldn't afford to buy it.
That's true, but that is a form of rationing.
No, it's not.
Of course it is.
No, it's not. The supply is there. The supply, as far as healthcare is concerned, is actually unlimited.
Are you trying to say that the only form of rationing can take place based on supply?
Sure.
I mean, that's a fallacy.
It's not a fallacy.
Of course it's a fallacy.
No, it's not.
Okay.
We're going to have some fun with this one.
Yeah, we
All
are.
Right.
Let's take this nationwide.
Okay.
And let's say that we have 300 million people in the United States.
Okay.
And I have 300 million. Everybody gets 3, so that's 900. I have 900 million
rolls of toilet paper.
And the price is $1.
Okay.
Not everybody has $1.
Okay.
Those people that have a buck, they get their toilet paper.
Yep.
Those people that don't have a buck don't get their toilet paper. But I still have supply left. It's
right.
just that they don't get any.
But that's not your problem.
Oh, I didn't say it was my problem. I am saying it's
and
a form of rationing.
And, but it's not rationing because you haven't limited what you have.
It isn't based just on supply.
Yeah, it is.
No, it isn't.
We're going to have to work on this one. We're
yeah, we are.
We'll get our dictionaries.
Okay.
We're going to have to work on this. Because from an economic standpoint, okay, from an economics standpoint, okay,
mm-hmm.
if the supply is sufficient, okay, then what you don't get is a demand increase price.
That's true.
Okay. And if you don't have a demand increase price, then what you don't have is rationing.
No, that isn't true. That does not follow.
The African American.
All it says is you aren't going to be able to raise your price based on the demand. So you aren't going to be able to charge a buck and a quarter. You're still only going to be able to charge the dollar.
I'm going to research this more.
Okay.
my economic sense says that demand rationing is a fallacy. That if
I'm not saying demand rationality or demand rations. I'm saying price rationed.
But you would be correct, okay, if because of supply, the price went up and it made it less affordable.
For the person who does not have the purchase price, it is not affordable.
But I'm saying that if the supply was short enough that the price went up because of the shortage, then I think you would be correct.
No, but if you have
an unlimited supply, okay, and a fixed cost price, you know, if I have 20 million rolls of toilet paper and
mm-hmm.
my fixed cost is 90 cents a roll and my profit is 10 cents,
right?
So that's why I've got my dollar, okay, my cost is a dollar. That's what I need to have to sell the roll of paper. Okay? If you don't have the dollar, you know, I'm not rationing on price. But if I only have 50,000 rolls of toilet paper and people start bidding the price up to $15 a roll so they get one of them, that is a rationing event based on cost.
What is the difference? What is the difference between the toilet paper costs a buck and I don't have a buck, or the toilet paper costs $15 and I don't have $15? What is the difference?
Supply.
No.
Yeah.
The difference is the cost. And I don't have it.
To you. The cost has a problem to you.
Let's define rationing.
All right, this is what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Because I got two dogs sitting here whining.
Oh, and you need to let them out.
Okay. So the choice is either we're going to have silence or you can talk for the next 5 minutes.
Nope, that isn't going to happen.
Or we're going to have to agree that this is going to have to come back
yep.
up in the green room next week
yep.
after we both have a chance to spend some time
yep.
contemplating our thoughts. And
yep.
evaluating our definitions and coming up
you
with
betcha.
A solution.
Works for me.
All right,
have a good
Thanksgiving.
You
Bill,
too.
You have a good Thanksgiving.
All righty.
And I'm going to go take care of my dogs because tomorrow they're going to the kennel for 4 days, and they're not going to like that.
Oh, they aren't. Give them an extra treat tonight.
All right, Bill, have a good
Alrighty.
Week.
Good night,
everybody.
Night.